Is your business plan very unclear and you're tirelessly working at a low-paying career? Let's help you get out of the rut and let go of the fear. It's time to excel into the million-dollar stratosphere. Now, here's your host of The Balanced Millionaire, who will take you there, Eileen Mendel.
Hello, everyone. This is Eileen Mendel. I am your host of The Balanced Millionaire. I have today with me two very special guests. And on this show, you will learn from industry experts on how to catapult your business, as well as effectively get the financial resources that are available to help you with your business needs. Without further delay, let me share with you about our first guest, Paula Shaw. Paula Shaw is a grief and addictions therapist. She is also a best-selling author, keynote speaker, and transition radio talk show host on AM 1170, The Answer. For more than 20 years, Paula has been passionate about helping people navigate the stress of change and challenge. She uses mind-body tools and techniques to help people ease and eliminate their stress, depression, anxiety, and the condition they exacerbate, like weight gain, relationship stress, career challenges, lack of energy, and self-destructive, addictive behavior. Paul is the author of Chakras, The Magnificent Seven, which he published in 2002, as well as Grief, When Will This Pain Ever End? Finding Your Way Out of the Depths of Despair After Profound Loss, which was released on June 15, 2015. And today, Paula's going to talk about her newest book, which is going to be launched. It's called Saying the Right Thing When You Don't Know What to Say. So welcome, Paula. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Eileen. And you know what? Right up front, I want to own that I sent you an old bio. I didn't realize it. And I want to say that my current show is not Transition Radio. I did that one for 3 years, but now the new show is called Change It Up with Paula Shaw. So my bad. I'm so sorry. Thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Okay. Well, you're welcome. So yes, I remember you have a new show called Change It Up Radio, which I've listened to multiple times. And
Tell us
more about though your new book, because a lot of people are interested in this topic. Tell us why you wrote the book and what it's about.
Okay. Well, for the last 26 years, I have been a life transitions therapist and a grief specialist. And so what I find is that when life deals us difficult situations that create loss, of course, that comes in many packages, not just death. So it can be the loss of a job, the loss of a home, the loss of health, the loss of a partner, for sure. You know, divorce is a huge loss issue. Breakups are devastating, huge loss issues. And the normal natural response to loss is grief. But as a collective consciousness, we tend to associate grief with death. But it's actually so much bigger than that. And after 26 years of having people sit in my office in tears, saying to me, I feel so alone. No one brings it up, or no one has talked to me about it. No one comes to see me. And I know exactly why that happens. It happens because even the most well-meaning people feel at a loss for what to say. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. And they're terrified they're going to make things worse. So they put it off and they put it off and they put it off. And before you know it, they never made the call. They never made the visit. and the sad person is left all alone to deal with their pain. So I said, okay, enough of this. I'm going to write a simple little book that's basically going to give people the right words, the right mindset, and the right actions to take to help someone who's in emotional pain in an effective way. And out of that came saying the right thing when you don't know what to say.
Well, I think that's about time that someone wrote a book like yours, because
thank you.
Because I've felt that too when I was in the midst of something myself, or I find that when I know somebody who's hurting and you just don't know the right words.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that knowing what to say and having the trouble of knowing what to say, why is that happening so many times? What are they fearing? What are people fearing?
You know what? I think there are a lot of causes, a lot of reasons, shall we say, that people don't know the right thing to say. Mostly it's that as a society, we're not good at talking about our feelings. We're good at talking about the latest football game or the bargain we got or the book we've just read. You know, we're good about that. But when it comes to pain, when it comes to things that we're hurting over, we don't really do that well. I mean, think about the fact that in most corporations, people get 3 days to a week after a significant death in the family. And you know, we're all so busy, and we are all encouraged to be positive, to be upbeat, you know, all of those things that are societal ideas and norms that, you know, we all think we need to be following. So having conversations that are meaningful and even healing when someone is not upbeat, when someone is devastated or traumatized, this is not something we get much practice at. So, and then sometimes we're dealing with cultural norms, family values. Maybe some families, they're like stiff upper lip, you know, just take a deep breath and march on. Yeah, that's how we handle our stuff. Or, you know, so we have lack of experience. We have family norms, cultural norms, lack of being in these kinds of difficult situations enough times that we have comfort with it. When people are uncomfortable, they run for the hills. So, you know, as a society, we do not gravitate towards situations where we don't feel confident and comfortable. And most people haven't had enough experience. You know, there are some professionals out there like hospice workers, you know, who encounter this all the time. So they get pretty good at having these kinds of conversations. But most folks don't. And in the workplace, it's actually sort of frowned upon to take time away from work to have these meaningful conversations. So hurting people just have to suck it up and go on with their day and try to be productive. It's really tough.
Now, this brings to mind a good friend of mine was killed suddenly in a car crash. Mm. And
I'm sorry.
Yes, but that was several years ago, but it still, you know, reverberates sometimes in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so a group of friends got together with the local church, and we all expressed our feelings about what had happened. It mm-hmm. got us a chance to let it out. What are you recommending for, you know, what do you recommend? Is that a good way to do it, to get some of these people who really cared about that person together so they can talk about it and, you know, express like how angry or how upset they are that this had happened?
I think that's a fabulous idea. I mean, it's kind of like a version of group therapy, right? And for years, I led a grief group. And one of the most healing things in a group, well, there's positives and negatives in grief groups. And so I do want to alert your listeners to the fact that if a group is just a place where people sit week after week after week and talk about what happened with no processing and no tools to help them move through it, I don't think that's a very effective group for healing. You want to give people processes and tools so they can work through the grief, not become it. But what you and your friends did spontaneously, I think, is a beautiful idea because you shared the love for this person in common. You probably all shared your shock and your trauma in common. And so what more healing place could you be than for all of you to sit down together? Another version of this that I've seen done that at first I was skeptical about, but it turned out to be amazing, was a Facebook page created for the person who had been killed. So everybody could go there and post memories about her or ways they were feeling. And so it was another means of sharing with the group. And that page actually is still up. And this woman died 2 years ago. But people still know it's a place to go back to, almost like a gravestone, you know, where people can go and sit and feel a connection to the one who's lost. And in your case, and in this case of this Facebook page, a connection to the others who are feeling a similar pain.
That's really clever to have, you know, use of Facebook, because you can reach out also to people who are not in the vicinity of, you know, the person, for instance, some relatives or friends that are further out, further away, but still want to express their feelings and get some the shock or, you know, grieving out of their emotional body. So, yes. I was going to ask you, is there a perfect formula for saying the right thing?
Well, there isn't a perfect formula because every situation is unique, but I do have 5 steps that I recommend to people in order to make that conversation helpful and healing. And if I might, I will share those with you. The first one is set an intention before you begin. Setting intention is a very powerful way of putting out into the universe the energetic frequency that you would like to achieve. So the energetic, you know, it's all energy, right? The whole universe is made of yes, energy. So we can impact the way that energy flows by putting our will or our intention out there. So think about it. Before the conversation, actually set an intention in your mind, like, my intention is to help Eileen through this difficult time and to just give her a feeling that she is supported and not alone. That's an intention. So think about that before you begin the conversation. Step 2 is be present. Make sure your body and your mind are in the same place. Don't be thinking about what you did last night or what you have to go home and do after the conversation. Just be present in this space and time. To me, that's one of the most important keys to saying the right thing. If you're present, then you're going to pick up on where this person is energetically, and then you'll come from your humanity and you'll be able to actually say something helpful. The third step is to have a mindset going in of being supporting and comforting without judgment or criticism. This will help to create safety. And remember, the whole purpose of this conversation is to get them to talk. So the good news about that is you're off the hook as far as worrying about what to do and say to be helpful, because the most important thing is that you get the person to talk and process their pain. You don't have to have some genius idea about how to fix them. You just have to give them a safe place to talk and process. And then the fourth step is to listen with the intent to hear, not worrying about how you're going to respond. Just listen. When we really are listening, the right response comes. And then finally, respond from the heart, not the head. pain, emotional pain and grief is not an intellectual activity. It's a heart deal. And if you respond from the heart, then you can actually connect with this person on the level they need you to connect on. But if you go into intellect and you start making suggestions about ways they can move through this or ways they can feel better or how much time they should take to grieve. I actually had a woman tell me today that a friend of hers after a couple of weeks said her husband died, her husband of many years. And a friend said to her, I think it's been long enough. You're just using the death to get attention now. I almost died when I heard that. That is not responding respectfully from the heart.
Right. That sounds cruel.
It absolutely is. But when we go into our head, that's what can happen. You know, that's when people say things like, well, I guess God needed him more than you did. Or, hey, there's a guy around every corner. Don't cry about this breakup. You know, it's like totally discounting the emotional feelings the person is having. And that's what's primary in their experience in that moment.
Now, Paula, the person who is hurting, who is experiencing the pain, mm-hmm. how do they bring that up in a conversation? What do they say?
You know, that's a really good question, Eileen, and it's tricky because, believe it or not, oftentimes the person that's hurting doesn't want to bring up the problem because they don't want to bum everybody out or be a downer. So they bury their pain. I'll share with you a story from my own experience that I'm not proud of, but I will just say that I didn't know then what I know now. But a really dear friend of mine had been trying to get pregnant, and she finally got pregnant. And somewhere in the second month, she lost the baby. And so I was there for her as far as taking her to lunch, you know, trying to cheer her up, calling her, but I didn't bring up the loss because I didn't want to bum her out. I didn't want to bring her back to the sadness. And months later, we were talking about the whole thing, and she said to me, you know, it was the hardest part of the whole thing. And I said, what? And she said, nobody talked about it. Nobody talked about it, and I didn't want to bring it up and make them feel badly. So I had nowhere to go with my pain, no help in processing my pain. I never forgot that. She was my best friend, and I made the ultimate mistake of not bringing up the very thing she was in agony about.
For lack of a better term, then I would think then the person who is hurting needs to release the pain. And the person who is ready to hear the topic, like you said, has those qualities, be present and, you know, help the person by listening, helps them almost like a sounding board, helps them so that they can get through the pain. Is that correct?
That's a huge point. Yes. And, you know, what I would encourage people who are the one in pain, who are hurting, sometimes you just have to be brave and say to somebody, you know, I'm just in a really tough place right now. Can I talk about it with you? Or say, you know, some days are better than others, but today I'm not doing so well. Could we talk? You may have to just ask. You may have to invite the other person into the conversation and let them know what you need. Now, another thing that often happens is, because we are so uneducated about what is helpful to say, we say things that we've heard before, like, well, grief just takes time, or you've got to stay busy, you know, stay engaged in life, it'll pass. These things are not true, and they're not helpful. But we don't know what to say, so we say these kinds of sometimes inane or abusive things because they were things that we heard or that were said to us. And that's why I say if we're present and we're coming from our hearts, sometimes the most helpful thing to say is, well, I don't even know what to say. I can't imagine how hard this must be. Or tell me what I can do to help you. So if you're the person in pain, sometimes you have to just say to a person when they tell you to move on or, you know, it just takes time. Maybe you have to say something, try to come from this honest place of saying, maybe that's true, but right now it feels like it's going to be forever. Or thanks for that advice. Right now, I think I just need to feel my feelings and cry. So fight for yourself. Fight for your right to grieve if you're the one that's in pain. Fight for your right to feel those feelings. And that's not easy to do if you're in pain. That's why I thought it would be better to try to educate everyone as to how to truly be helpful and how to truly deal with this kind of situation in an effective way.
That all makes sense. If no one else brings up the topic, the person, you know, needs to just let others know how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. That I still feel the pain, give me time. Right now, thank you for any advice, but give me time to get over this.
Exactly.
So what is the most important thing that you would like our listeners to remember?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, first of all, we don't show up or we don't make the call because for a couple of reasons. We're uncomfortable because we don't feel competent about what to do. But also, we're all aware on some deep level that we're just a heartbeat away from being in the same kind of agony ourselves. Because life is uncertain. You know, one moment you can be on top of the world and the next moment your world can be falling apart. So being around hurting people is intimidating, especially for people who aren't good at expressing their feelings, you know, or who haven't done the work to process their past pain. So what I would just say, I think the most important thing is go to your humanity. Go into your heart and ask yourself, what would I need right now? What would I like to hear? What might actually help me? And maybe, you know, you just have to say, listen, I don't have any idea what to say or even what to do, but I'm here. And if you want, I'll just sit here quietly with you, or I'll give you a hug, or I just want you to know I'm here and I care. That's the underlying message. I'm here. And I care.
That's a really good message. I think that's comforting. And it also, you know, tells the other person, you know, whenever you're ready to open up and talk, let's talk.
Exactly. Exactly. But one thing I would like to say.
Yes.
Never say, listen, if there's anything you need, let me know. Or when you're ready to talk, give me a call. Because they won't. So be proactive. Check in with them once in a while and say, hey, how are you doing today? Would you like to talk? Are you feeling like doing a little processing would help? Then they can say yes or no. But if you're waiting for them to call, that call is most likely never going to come.
Now, you know, there's been a lot of traumatic things happening, you know, in the news where, you know, innocent people, a lot of people suddenly are scared, you know, to even go out in crowds, et cetera.
Yes.
You know, because of all the stuff that's been going on. And then they find out that, you know, someone, you know, close to them has, you know, been, you know, a victim of one of these attacks or these things. And oftentimes, you know, it's in the media, it's in the news, you know, it's out there. But, you know, how do you feel about all of that, you know, the hoo-ha and everything that's going on and the poor victims? I mean, a lot of concentration is on who did it and why, you know, why they did it. And then you just see maybe pictures of the victims. And I just was wondering, like, you know, is that, you know, something that we should all, you know, talk about a little bit more about, you know, the victims themselves, like, you know, their, you know, how they, the losses and talk about all about that in the media a little bit more, because the media always talks about the guy or the person or the woman or guy who did the crime.
Right.
Never about the people what happened afterwards.
Exactly.
Very, very little.
I think that's because the media is focused on sensationalism and getting ratings and having listeners and viewers instead of helping the human beings to heal. So I think your point is really well taken. If we focused more on what's the impact on the people who were there, you know, maybe interviewing people and asking them what they're feeling. Are you afraid? Are you just feeling depressed? Are you feeling discouraged about life on this planet? You know, we would all learn much more about our humanity and about the human condition, and it would be a much more healing focus for everybody because we all are humans and we all get horrified by terrible things happening and we all feel something, whether we knew somebody there or not. We all feel the pain of that. And so I think, yeah, let's focus on the people. Let's focus on what they're feeling. And I think, you know, if we focus more on feelings in all of life and in supporting others in the feelings they're having, we probably wouldn't have as many tragedies like you're describing.
And I also think that there wouldn't be so much anger because mm-hmm. there would be a system or process to deal with these traumatic incidences that affect, it's just affecting also people who don't even know those other people. Like, you know, myself, you know, if I hear something that happened in Florida or the East Coast and I don't mm-hmm. know those other people or have nothing related to those other people, but I still feel sad.
Sure.
And how, you know, so I think there has to be a way to, you know, for society and for the media to help people get through that process, and even for young children to hear about that, you know, how does it affect their growing up and their thoughts about life and the dangers in life?
It's so true. And children can be so negatively affected by the things that happen in the news. You know, when my children were growing up, there was the scandal about Bill Clinton, and, you know, we've all heard so many things. And the children have feelings, you know. We sometimes think children don't have the same kind of feelings adults do. Oh, yes, they do. When children go through traumatic things and they don't have the opportunity to heal and process it. So let's all be a lot more diligent about speaking to our children and helping them process their pain because it's very real, very real.
So, Paula, how can people get a hold of your book and get in touch with you as well?
Well, the book has not, Saying the Right Thing, has not been launched yet. It will be launched in the next couple of months. I should have a date soon. But my other book, Grief, When Will This Pain Ever End, and also the Chakra book, Chakras, the Magnificent Seven, are both available on Amazon. And I am easily reached at paulashaw.com.
Fantastic. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed today's segment, and we're going to go to a quick break and hear a word from our sponsors, and then you won't want to miss our next guest, so hang on. We'll be right back.
Former highly paid corporate insider and expert in scaling businesses for over three decades, Eileen Mindell is a serial entrepreneur, business consultant, renowned speaker, and author. Tune into The Balanced Millionaire on BBSRadio.com weekly on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to learn the secrets to working fewer hours and achieving financial breakthroughs, increased revenue, and prosperity while maintaining personal and professional balance and harmony. You can also hear us on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spotify. To schedule a private consultation about your business, call or text 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com. 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Klein of OneTrust Home Loans, Loan Coach Kelly. A while back, my business was in a slump, and it triggered a lot of self-doubt and fear, and it even had me questioning if I'd made the right career choice. So I booked a session with Paula Shaw. And after hearing my predicament, she explained that when we get into negative, self-sabotaging thinking and we are being run over by our limiting beliefs, it's almost impossible to create positive outcomes. She helped me clear those destructive thoughts and beliefs using her cutting-edge energy psychology techniques. Not only did I feel a whole lot better after the session, but within 2 weeks, I had 7 loans in my pipeline. I was so glad that I went to see Paula Shaw. And you should too. It really changed my perspective on life, business, and now my business is going great. You can reach her at 626-864-0756. That's 626-864-0756. 626-864-0756. Or check her out at paulashaw.com. That's paulashaw.com.
Welcome back from our break, everyone. This is Eileen Mendel, the host of The Balanced Millionaire. And I have our second guest with us today. His name is Joseph Mercado, and he is the founder of Mastermind University, an online educational portal for authors and entrepreneurs. He is the author of The Undiscovered You, a series of 23 personal development books that educate entrepreneurs about key words of the mind found in the universe, coining the term the law of replacement. Joseph is an entrepreneur from a small town called Farmingville, located on Long Island in New York. He is a 1998 graduate of Catherine Gibbs Trade School for Computer Networking and Information Technology. After graduation, Joseph ignited his journey with his first company at 19 years old called PC Networks, a network consulting firm. His experience led him to explore international trade, and he learned how to import and export computer hardware to and from overseas. Later on, Joseph found his passion in public speaking, conducting 392 public speaking events for Hewlett-Packard, while helping thousands of people on how to replace negative thinking with positive energy and how it creates an upward shift in our emotions. Along with mindset education, helping nonfiction authors transfer their books into online courses of education and helping them be their book mentor is where Joseph finds value today when it comes to information products and the industry of online education. Joseph's ability of content marketing allows authors to increase their awareness to the next level of information distribution. He truly enjoys reading positive books, sharing knowledge, wisdom, and love with all forms of people from around the world. So welcome, Joseph, on our show today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the great introduction, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's get started with the interview and find out more about how you work with authors. So in your process, tell us a little bit more about what your book transformation service is and how you work with nonfiction authors.
Sure, absolutely. It's a great question. And how it basically all starts is I just realized one day I'm thumbing through a book and I'm just sitting there just glancing through, and I realized that, you know, how much people don't have the time to sit and read through a whole book, or people that want to learn from a book and get educated. But let's face it, there's so many things that we weren't taught in high school or college, and we basically, such as when it comes to life skills, we have to find out for ourselves. And in that respect, you know, everybody has different forms of experiences that we all share, and how we can utilize the skill sets found in those experiences to help us, you know, deliver ourselves and reach that next plateau or next level in life. And, you know, when it comes to the book transformation, you know, it's almost like, think of it like kind of like a cliff notes. You read a book, but you take a certain key words and you're able to extract it and then put that all of those words on the drawing board. The things that are important, whether it's bullet points, italicized information, or just certain things that stick out that we can utilize or add to our lives that'll help benefit, especially the nonfiction author that is. Because if they want to get their book out and they want people to read it and people don't have time to read it and they want to see it digitally, transforming a book into an online course of education really helps people around the globe be able to, you know, practice or learn at their own leisure. And, you know, for something today in the digital age, you know, information is what fuels the economy. It's what fuels the mindsets of entrepreneurs. And to be able to extrapolate certain means of content and put it into an info product that is, such as a course, a workshop, a program, or even individual classes, really gives the nonfiction author the ability, you know, to not only get more exposure, but really to educate people inside that field that are craving or that are searching for that information on the internet.
And can you tell us a little bit more about how that works? Is it all done? Is it a done-for-you process, or do you work side by side and show them how to do it themselves?
Well, there's two ways. There's really it's actually doing it on the side. I have myself and a team that we're able to, you know, work on these projects. Each project takes anywhere between 14 and 31 days. If there's something additive that they want to learn on their own on how to do it, you know, we do have a separate program where they can get further educated. You know, I do work personally one-on-one, you know, with a nonfiction author. So it does help them give more insight. So if they want to, let's say, transform their books later on down the road, they can do that gracefully, yes.
And how long does it take, once somebody has a book out, how long does the process take from start to finish to get that book onto an online course?
It really depends on the page count. So let's say you have a 250-page book. That's it takes about anywhere between, something like that would take about 21 days. So it could be as minimal as 14 days. It can go up to 31 days, depending on the length of the book and also the availability of the nonfiction author, because we do like to work side by side. You know, it's a thing where it's not like where, you know, weeks go by, they don't hear from us. We like to report daily or every few days just to keep on the same page, getting some feedback and making sure things are tweaked along the way. You know, so that way when it comes down to the finished product, you know, we all have an agreement and awareness of what's being created, produced, and also it's going to be hosted on a platform for online educational purposes.
And is there a certain platform that you post it on or that you recommend, or do they have a choice of platforms?
Well, there's different forms of platforms they could use. At Mastermind University, we do have our own platform that's being constructed right now where online courses can easily be plugged into so that a nonfiction author can kind of do it themselves. You know, at the beginning, we can help them out with the process. And we do have video tutorials that make it a lot easier and proficient for a nonfiction author to do so, you know, to make the process less pain-free and headache-free, so that way they can get their information up and running nearly immediately after the course is produced.
And what separates you then, Joe, from any other book mentor in the industry?
That's an awesome question. I'm glad you asked, Eileen. And what separates us from any other, let's say, book mentor or anybody else that's looking to transform books or even doing it in a similar fashion, is that we really genuinely care about the client, in the sense that when a client makes an investment within themselves, within us, and hiring us to do the job and do it correctly for their book project, we also work in the sense where, again, this is the separation part from anyone else, is that we're going to work hard to get that return investment back within, let's say, 3 to 6 months. So we allocate a certain time frame, and it basically act as a representative to get their book back and tap into my existing channels, my network, and reach out and go above and beyond to see that person recoup their return on investment. It's not like a thing where you're just hiring us just to do a project and then they're on their own. So we want to be able to spoon feed them, hold their hand to a certain point, and also work side by side as a team player, because my personal philosophy is that teamwork makes the dream work. And in order to make the dream work and get the results, you know, we have to go above and beyond and do certain things to make it happen, and that's actually help them not only promote and market, but also sell their courses, so again, they can recoup that ROI back.
Now, can you give us an actual example? I mean, you don't have to tell us the name of the client, but give us an example of what you're talking about.
Sure. So I've taken one client, a nonfiction author I've worked with in a couple of years ago, where she was going through some hard times, and she had got a book published through Balboa Press. And what happened was, when I asked her what did they give her, and what did she pay exactly for that package? So when I heard numbers as far as $16,000, I said, for $16,000, like, how many books did they help you sell? And the answer was zero. And what I did was I said, well, that sounds a little ludicrous, spending that much amount of money and not having one book sold. I said, what about marketing? And I said, the answer was, well, that's separate. That's an additive fee. So I said, you know, let me do something a little different. So I did it. I started reaching out and calling up some friends and people that I knew, or even family, and said, hey, let's support a friend of mine who has a great book, and, you know, let's go ahead and just buy some copies. So I reached out to my internal network, just people I knew right away that would benefit from the book and the information within it. And, you know, I just felt that, you know, that's a good prime example of, you know, showing, going above and beyond. And it only takes a few minutes to make a few phone calls, you know, just to show the effort and that a client could see a formal result on a little end. Because even if it starts on something small, it just goes to show that, you know, the probability of something big coming along that does exist. So I always believe it starts at one before it can get to 10 or 1,000. And it was just taking that step, that leap of faith and saying, hey, this is what we can do to start getting results. And that's how it happened.
And so once, you know, she got a few sales from your making a few phone calls, how did it bloom out to so where she was able to get her payback on the investment for the book that she had published? When did you immediately start the online process with her, or how did that go about?
Well, the process took several months, you know, again, working together and, you know, being on the same page with everybody in their schedule. But what it helped out was, you know, throughout a course of time, you know, with different opportunities, speaking opportunities, book sales, recommending it to other people for coaching, you know, that's when, you know, the ROI back started to come about. And it's really just looking at not just one particular angle, but various angles of approach that use the strategies to help get that return investment for the book project. And, you know, those are just one little ways of the book sales, and you have the coaching, you know, speaking. So you look at the variety of angles once again, and that's really what's going to allow, because if you just rely just only on the book sales, unless it's going to be a book order of, let's say, 1,000 or 10,000 piece order, you know, naturally, you know, that would, you know, bring that investment back. But sometimes if those orders aren't coming in, we have to look at other areas of what we can do as opposed to what we can't do in order to drive in, you know, that result that myself and the client are looking for.
And it seems to me that a lot of authors, you know, a lot of consultants and coaches like to publish books because it gives them the credibility. But when it comes time to marketing and selling the book, that's where they're stuck, because they're not able to actually get enough copies out there. So a lot of them put their books on Amazon and encourage people to go ahead and, you know, bring them up to the bestseller point. But that's not really enough. Don't you agree? It's just not enough for them to make enough sales, even if they're on a bestseller, Amazon, you know, list, whatever. So how do they find you when they get the disappointment of, like, this is not working, for I'm not getting the sales I expected? How do they connect with you or find you so that they know that someone like you exists to help them?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, because there's a lot of questions that come about with Amazon being on there, and you get so many people, let's say in the self-help market industry, that's inundated with nonfiction authors. And, you know, somebody says, okay, what do I do? And they can come find you. Well, a lot of it is through, you know, social media. I do put myself on a presence on my YouTube channel, you know, creating how-to videos on a weekly basis. Also through Mastermind University, that can be found. I've been, you know, through SEO and RSS feeds, and, you know, plugging my our services in the different arenas around the globe on the internet. The thing is also is the one thing I want to emphasize on is content marketing and how authors can get found. Let's say not being on Amazon, not being a bestseller, because let's face it, there's a lot of different ways somebody can become a bestseller. They can call up their buddy and say, hey, do me a favor. I want you to purchase, you know, 50,000 of my books. I'll pay you back tomorrow. You know, there's all different ways on stretching it out and becoming an Amazon bestseller.
Right.
Really, I suggest that an author really takes it upon himself to market himself. Amazon can be one outlet. That's fine. But what if Amazon didn't exist? Then what would they do? So you got to create content. Content is what allows, you know, an author to get that traffic or to be recognized. See, there's four key things that a nonfiction author must understand when it comes to creating, let's say, marketing campaigns. One, obviously, if you have an info product such as a manuscript book, you want to know the keywords in your market that work. You want to have content that supports those keywords, and it has to be good quality content, it is, and proven content. And you also want to have, you know, your SEO. Have it optimized, or your content optimized is very important for it to feed the algorithms what they want in the search engines. And the other thing is too, is again, is setting up campaigns that have traffic generated to those sources. So that's the biggest thing, is content marketing, content development, having the right content, which is why people come to me, is to have that content constructed. also being educated on what to do with the content. So if I recommend someone says, okay, you need a batch of, let's say, to start 10 articles and then submit them in article directories, then they're going to have to know how to market themselves to article marketing. So what we do is you combine the two. We have a service that we also have an educational aspect so that someone can go and create their own stuff and do it on their own, but they're not going to need to hire me again to write articles. If they want to, that's fine. But I suggest they learn the ropes and they can do it on their own. You have a team of people do it, which is what we can be useful. That's the key thing is content marketing. Really, content is king in its own respect. And with content, it makes it much easier to saturate the search engines with juicy information that people are searching for on a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
How do you find out whether, you know, that is the right content, particularly since they've already put the book together and now they're worried that, you know, there's something they might have to change their book to, you know, to align with what people are looking for? Does that happen sometimes where people have to revise the book so that the content is more searchable?
It all depends on the manuscript itself. There are times and moments where I've seen challenges or been up against, even myself with my own books, where I've had to tweak or alter a manuscript and kind of just fine tune it where I can bend it without totally rechanging the whole entire segment of it and just bend it to a percentage point of, you know, where it can be, let's say, addressing the market. That's why I always suggest that before an author writes a book, if you have an idea about a book, you want to be able to survey the market. Ask the people, the audience, what is it that they want? What is the problem that the market is experiencing? And then find and devise a solution that is in conjunction with that problem. So now you become a solution provider. Better yet, your manuscript becomes a solution provider to the people in the industry. So it's something very important. A lot of authors don't write the book first, and then they'll find out later if it's something that's needed or not. And it's kind of like the part. You want to make sure you do things in sequence so you're not going back to the drawing board giving yourself 3 or 5 times the amount of work.
Is it more important, however, for an author maybe to go through that exercise of testing out and doing some market research on the content before they even, you know, publish the book? Because that way they don't have to go through more revisions later on. Is that something where maybe someone has a book that they want to get published, but maybe they also, like you said, want to monetize it using, you know, courses and things? Should they come to you, or would it be wise to come to you before they even get the book published?
Absolutely. It's wise because there's a lot of angles, a lot of direction. There's a lot of strategies or methods or things that I can help them recognize that maybe they haven't seen before. So before laying out capital or necessary expenses and taking certain roads that might lead them to a dead end, it's very important to reach out to someone like myself, you know, that could help guide them and give them the right leading principles to prevent those failures from taking place. See, the whole thing is coming to a book mentor is to learn from that person's mistakes, their financial mistakes, their timely mistakes of, you know, putting a lot of emphasis into something when it's not necessary, doing things out of sequence, which is just prolong the project, and, you know, to maybe prevent somebody from taking a monetary decision and increasing their level in that respect. But as far as, like, going back and revisions, there's always going to be revisions. My motto is this, is always, you know, a manuscript is never finished. It's always going to be a masterpiece on its own by itself, but there's always going to be certain tweaks and edits along the way. And I think that's important. But, you know, knowing certain key principles of what to do as opposed to what not to do is very important, because those little forms of tidbits of maybe failing or stumbling upon a certain aspect in the book industry, you know, could be costly. And what I like to do is help nonfiction authors, you know, have them prevent them from having to spend unnecessary dollars, you know, when there's something that they could be made aware of, you know, upfront. It's all that awareness is key, because once you're aware of something, you'll know what to do as opposed to what not to do, and which again can help somebody, you know, save them thousands of dollars.
Can I ask you, because you mentioned the number 16,000 is what one of your clients had spent on just getting her book published. What is a more reasonable amount of money to be spent if you're getting a book published? And then how much would you be spending to put it online? Can you give us the figures on that?
Sure. So the content packages and book transformation packages can run anywhere from, you know, they should be anywhere from, let's say, 1,200 to, let's say, 6,000. It can go up to as much as 10,000. But that was, if somebody's going to spend, let's say, $10,000 on a package, you know, that's got to, A, always want to ask the question. So, like, what I did was when I first started out, I called up almost every single publishing house on the planet, even individual self-publishers. I had a list of 10 questions that I would ask the same firms, the same publishing houses, the same publishers, and to find out, you know, what is it they're getting, what they're spending, what are they not getting, if there's something that's not included, how much additional is it? If someone's spending over $10,000 and they're not getting, let's say, a year of mentorship, or even 6 months, you know, to be walked through, helped, guided, or educated. The way I look at it, I need is almost like someone's coming to me, they're coming to me not just for, you know, valuable information, but someone's like coming to like a university, you know, to like a Yale or Harvard, but in the sense of publishing and mentoring. There's a lot of key components that get left out along the way, and that I look to put, you know, under the same rooftop, so that's all pulled out and explained properly. So if somebody's spending something $10,000 and they're not getting someone that's going to help them recoup their return on investment, or they're not going to spend time, or they're not going to do things to help them above and beyond, or what I like to do is over deliver, that person may be spending unnecessary dollars. Maybe it's not the right outfit for them to get their book published. You know, they can actually have a whole content marketing campaign for $5,500 and have all that done instead of, let's say, you know, just for a video sales letter, let's say, for instance. That alone could be $10,000. Never mind articles, newsletter, web content for website, let's say it's 2 hours a week, month for educational purposes on what to do and not to do, how to export your books to foreign trade. You know, so a lot of these things are very, very important on, you know, on asking the key qualifying questions in order to get in the right key qualifying answers so it doesn't turn into a monetary disaster for the non-fictions we have, the authors we have.
So you're saying, because a lot of these people that are self-published authors, their goal was just to get a book out. I mean, you know, they think that's going to give them, you know, the credibility. It's going to bring them more clients and business. And often, you know, it takes a lot of effort before that happens, or maybe it doesn't happen at all. So you help them develop a strategy before the book gets published to market the book, so that it has, you know, you said multiple avenues of speaking and you know, getting speaking engagements, as well as the online courses that can be made from the book, as well as news articles or other info products that could be made out of the book. That strategy has to be thought about before they even, you know, maybe even before they invest all those dollars, you know, to find out, you know, and find out that those dollars, you know, they wasn't going to get them very far, that the book itself needs to be marketed. I mean, isn't that what you do? You help them with the strategy going forward. And the sooner they understand how they're going to get the book marketed and make money, then they should actually publish the book at that point, because they know how they're going to make money on it.
Yes. No, absolutely. That's a good point that you bring up, Eileen. And it's a thing where, yes, we definitely do help them strategize, come up with, let's say I have an author's checklist so they know all the different variables of content that are needed. Because one of the two main important things after content's created, they understand the keywords, they know about optimization, they know about traffic, generating traffic to the site. It's once you have that content, all the pieces, it's like having a car. You can have all the components to a car, but if you don't have, let's say, the chassis and the tires at the end of it, you have everything else, how's that vehicle going to run? How's it going to take off? How's it going to get into sixth gear and start using, you know, its pistons, or start using, you know, the power in the engines as the horsepower to actually motivate it? And it's the same thing with a book. You got to have all the right components. You got to assemble it together. And then once you have the content, it's all to be prepared to have the funnel system. Without the funnel system, there is no automation. There is no leveraging one's life as a nonfiction author so they could have that independence of freedom and traveling what they want to do it at will with their family and friends or for themselves. And so that's why it's very important to strategize, know the key components up front, know the sequence of getting things done, you know, just having some core components as far as, you know, on the publishing aspect, you know, is not only the content created, but how's the quality of the content? I always suggest, look at someone that's already made it in the industry. industry, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just all you have to do is change and improve something by 10% or more, and it's considered a new invention. And you know, with that statistic, you know, it makes it a lot easier for nonfiction authors to really devise a good plan, a good strategy, and you know, a goal line, you know, to execute both that plan and that strategy, to implement it properly, you know, to have a published manuscript that's ready to be marketed and create positive results. And those are the major key components.
So basically, you said it basically in a nutshell, and I'll just repeat it for our audience, that having that, you have the expertise because you've seen so many books, you know, that have floundered, and you also know what works. To have a mentor, the expertise of designing a plan ahead of time that will get your book sold and get you on stages. It's not just selling the book that will make the money, but getting you clients as well as speaking engagements. That's going to get you your return on investment. And because you've seen these models that work, you know what works, you can emulate those same sort of principles for your own book. Is that correct, Joe?
Yes, that is correct. They can emulate and they can actually duplicate, and just creating a system that allows someone to be able to, you know, after they're learning, be able to do it on their own and take the valuable knowledge and information and do so. And I want to add one thing, if you don't mind, is also,
sure,
you know, when someone decides to hire myself, my company, to help them as a, you know, book mentorship, book marketing, content development, you know, we also create a, what we call an MMU educator profile. So they become an educator automatically by having their book transformed, so that we can go ahead and plug it into our system and introduce it into our Mastermind University group on, let's say, Facebook or LinkedIn, or if we want to reach out to people. Because every time I think, let's say, someone, and you know, that's been through something, let's say it's grief, I'll just use that as an example. If I hear someone that's been through a loss of a loved one, you know, and I know that grief person, I'm working with someone that has a book on grief, I want to recommend that, that person connect them. It's like connecting the dots. What we do is we connect the people. And it's another way of helping getting that return on investment back from the nonfiction author. Also, what we do is we also add another bonus of creating a book insert ad, which goes into our Mastermind Books, which is the bookstore for Mastermind University. And it also helps syndicate and get more exposure on the viral aspect for the author's book. They look at this as far as getting more book sales. Now, don't get me wrong, book sales is a small ticketed item when it comes to sales success. And when you have coaching program or a workshop or classes or being an educator, you're conducting and you're getting paid for the value of information. Now we create that to the course. Now you have a high ticketed item, which gives that author more of an ability to improve their, again, right back to the time.
So Joe, we're about out of time here. Is there anything else that you would like to say to the audience before we close our segment here?
Yes, actually I would. I would like to say, for those authors, nonfiction authors that are writing their books and they have a story to tell or they have really good information, learning from life's experiences, there's going to be a lot of roadblocks. There might be a lot of negatives. There may be some negative naysayers that have something to say or just say, oh, you're never going to get your book done. Who's that going to help? You know, and a person feels like giving up or quitting or feel like it's not going to work, or I put all this time and money so far. You know, I just want to encourage you as a nonfiction author to just keep going with what you're doing. You have a valuable purpose, and for you to continue your journey with writing your book, your info product, you know, just think of the person that's out there that may be having a moment in despair or they're on their last breath, and your book can be the life jacket that can bring that person back to life because of the fact that you took the time to release that information, share that knowledge and wisdom, and use experiences as the bridge connect it all. You can really go a long way and help somebody in their life go from negative to positive, all because you are willing not to give up and get that book out there, and make it a publication, and have it transformed into an online course helping millions of people around the world. So I just want to encourage people to keep going, don't give up, and always stay in the positive note, keep your eyes on the prize.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. And again, people can contact you through Mastermind University. That's your online educational portal. Is that the best way to contact you?
Yes, they can visit me on mastermindyouniverse.net. Again, I'll repeat that again. That's mastermind, all one word, universe.net. Or they can reach me directly at area code 631-494-4421. Or email me at Mercado, M-E-R-C-A-D-O, Jason Joseph, at mastermindyuniverse.net.
Thank you very much for the wisdom that you shared with our audience today. And I'd like to thank all of our guests for being here today. And I trust the listeners found value in the information. Remember, if you'd like to connect with me for a complimentary chat, The Balanced Millionaire, to discuss taking your company to the next level or get the financing you need, you can do so at www.innereduinternational.com or contact me by calling or texting 760-450-6133.
Thank you so much. I just want to say thank you, Eileen. Thank you, Doug. I really, really appreciate the opportunity. It's always been a pleasure in exchanging information that of value. And again, I just want to say thank you so much. I want you both to have a wonderful evening. For all
you
of
too.
Us out there listening.
You too. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. All
Good
right.
Night.
Take care. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into The Balanced Millionaire with your host, Eileen Mendel, CEO of InnerEdge International, business consultant, multimedia marketing expert, renowned speaker and author. Connect with Eileen Mendel, The Balanced Millionaire. Increase your confidence, creativity, balance, awareness, direction, motivation, and catapult your business to the next level and beyond.